A few months ago, the parish of St. James the Great in Alabang hosted a relic of today's saint, St. Charbel Makhlouf. And I was there. It also happened to be the birthday of Bishop Mercado, and there was a mass there in his honor. He was recovering from his long illness and surgery, and he was going to be the main celebrant. So many, many people went to the mass, many clergy went there. And that gave me an opportunity to venerate the relic of St. Charbel. Now, I have not spent a lot of time reflecting on Charbel. I think in my own reflections, I always think of him in connection with Lebanon, because Lebanon is such a suffering nation. Beautiful country where people of different religions have historically lived together in peace, but has been the subject of terrible violence and has absorbed millions of refugees, and now, even to this day, in fact, is it caught up in the conflict between the Hezbollah and the Israelis. So southern Lebanon especially is a war zone. So I always think of St. Charbel as the intercessor for Lebanon. But when I got to the parish of St. James, and I saw people were not only there for the birthday of the bishop, but they were there to venerate the relics, and I heard some of the stories about Charbel. His great popularity isn't because he's from Lebanon, it's because he's a miracle worker. And there are many, many miracles, miraculous healings, and answers to prayer through the intercession of St. Charbel. His life has never been personally attractive to me because he was a hermit. He withdrew. First, he was very poor, and he was from a poor area, and he withdrew from the world as it is and dedicated himself to prayer and sacrifice. Something like St. Anthony of the Desert, the father of the monks of the desert back in the 4th century, the 3rd century. So St. Charbel had a life of extreme solitude and suffering. Kind of a classic image of what's a holy man like. What's a holy man like? He's like St. Charbel. But not many people are called to that style of life. In any case, as I say, there's a great devotion and great and growing devotion to him. He's rich soil, using the image from today's parable. He's rich soil, for sure. He bears a hundredfold. Well, let's turn to the scriptures of the day. As I have said several times, we're in this season of the parables, because in year A, in these weeks, 14, 15, and 16, in ordinary time, 17, we read from the parables in Matthew chapter 13. And in the weekday readings, we're reading the same parables. So today we read the explanation that Jesus gave of the parable of the sower. We didn't read the parable of the sower because it was the feast of St. Mary Magdalene a few days ago. I remember we had this gospel a couple of Sundays ago, and in my own pondering of the gospel, I listened to the video presentation or video sermon of Bishop Barron. You probably know Bishop Barron is very well-known commentator on the Sunday readings. And it always happens that his videos are made available on Sunday, and usually after I've already prepared my own homily and maybe had some masses, and then I get a chance to listen to Bishop Barron, and I realize, oh, that would have been a really good thing to put into a homily. Anyway, what I read, and I don't remember everything he said, but one of the things that struck me from his comments on this parable was when he mentioned, he focused on the four different types of soil, which is, of course, symbolic of the different ways that our hearts receive or fail to receive the word. But when we have pondered this gospel before, and so it's always a challenge to us not to understand what the parable means, but to understand our hearts and whether we're good soil or not, and why we're not good soil. Anyway, he started out with, of course, the Lord's own explanation of the parable, and the first kind of soil, which I usually skip over, is that on the footpath. And I usually skip over it because I'm always thinking, well, that doesn't really apply to people who come to daily mass and ponder the word every day. They're not usually a footpath. If they were, they wouldn't be here. But I always associate the footpath with stubbornness, pride, hardness of heart, matigas na ulo, footpath. But Jesus' own explanation of it is that the seed sown on the path is the one who hears the word of the kingdom without understanding it. It doesn't say who is hardened to the word or blocks the word or refuses to listen. He hears the word without understanding it. And what Bishop Barron pointed to was the necessity of understanding. He said something along the lines of, we have to keep learning our faith so that we understand it. It's part of our responsibility, if we want to be rich soil, to keep learning the truths of the faith and opening ourselves to the mysteries of the faith, understanding. I don't remember ever thinking of it that way, because I don't think of understanding as the opposite of being a footpath. But anyway, this is what Jesus himself says. And so understanding, though, is not simply learning the catechism. Understanding means more than gaining knowledge about the faith. Understanding implies welcoming into the heart. In fact, it was just in yesterday's gospel, if I could remind you. In yesterday's gospel, wait a minute. Was it 2 days ago? How can that be? Where is that? Oh yeah, yesterday, here. Where they asked Jesus, why do you speak in parables? And Jesus quotes from a prophecy of Isaiah, in which he's saying they're going to close their eyes, they're going to close their ears, and therefore they won't gain the benefit of hearing the word. And this is how it says it. Gross is the heart of this people. They will hardly hear with their ears. They have closed their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and be converted. So understand, there's the word understanding again. Understand with the heart, not just understand intellectually, as we in modern times tend to use it, as if education simply means stuffing the mind with more knowledge. The understanding is welcoming in the heart. So that's actually the same as what we would think. Not to be a footpath means to be welcoming of the word. With the rise of AI, there's a lot of concern among educators and among people who are concerned about education. Well, what does education mean now? Because now all knowledge is instantly available. So why does anyone have to go to school? And the problem there is there's a wrong understanding of education, as if education is simply filling people's minds with knowledge. That's not education. And if it was, I mean, that used to be part of education, that you had to memorize things. But now you don't have to, because it's in your phone in a second, you can get all the knowledge you would ever need. So education it has to be re-understood, has to be go back to the old understanding, that education is not simply knowledge, it's the shaping of the person. What do we do with knowledge? What kind of person am I going to be? How do I use the gifts I have been given? Education is formation, not just information. Well, in today's first reading, the emphasis, again, seems to be on this first example of the soil condition, the footpath. The prophet Jeremiah says, or the Lord says through Jeremiah, return, rebellious children, for I am your master. Well, the word rebellious makes it sound like he's referring to footpath people. And at the very end of the reading, when it says that the Lord will restore his people and bring them back from their rebellious condition, he says, At that time, all the nations will be gathered together to honor the name of the Lord at Jerusalem, and they will walk no longer in their hard-hearted wickedness. So hard-hearted wickedness seems to be a good description of the footpath. Well, we know that we shouldn't be a footpath. I mean, anyone who knows anything about the Word of God knows you can't just close yourself to it. Now, the temptation is to be a footpath because the Word challenges us. Not just knowing what it says in the Bible, but realizing this requires me to change. I have to turn away from my rebelliousness. I have to soften up my hard-hearted wickedness. I have to acknowledge I'm a sinner and I need the Lord's mercy. And that's something in us doesn't like that kind of change. But the wonderful thing about the Lord, and this comes out in today's first reading, is that He wants us to change and He doesn't give up on us. Even when we're stuck in hard-hearted wickedness, He keeps giving us the opportunity to come up out of it. Return, rebellious children, return. Don't stay in that barren condition. You're not going to bear 100 or 60 or 30-fold. You won't bear anything if you're like that. So don't be like that. That's the attitude of the Lord in the first reading. Not only does He call us out of that barrenness, but you could say out of that rockiness or out of that thorniness, out of anything that limits the growth of the Word. Not only does He call us out of it, He leads us. He's a shepherd. The Lord will guard us as a shepherd guards his flock. He's not simply commanding us from a distance and telling us be different, be better. He's leading us up out of our hard-hearted wickedness so that we can be rich soil. So the Lord provides everything we need for our conversion. It's not true that the Lord has an unfair demand that we have to be good in order to get His grace. He's showering us with grace all the time, just like He's scattering the seed of His Word all the time, even when we are a footpath. The possibility of becoming fruitful is what makes this an appealing parable. If it was simply the fact that we are the kind of soil that we are and there's nothing we can do about it, it would be a pretty discouraging parable, because we know that we're not bearing 100-fold, 60-fold, 30-fold. We know that we have plenty of thorns, worldly anxiety, lure of riches, that we are afraid of tribulation, that when suffering comes, we tend to lose our way. We know that about ourselves, and if that's the way we are, that would be very discouraging. But if that's the way we are and there's a way out of it, well, then there's hope. In fact, there's great hope. The Lord wants our fruitfulness more than we want it, and He provides for it. So when we look at St. Charbel, we say, are you going to live like St. Charbel? Are you going to withdraw into a desert and live on one meal a week? No, I don't think, unless you're called to that, don't do that. Because if you try it, you'll fail and then you'll get discouraged. No, do what God calls you to do, but with confidence in Him, not in your own ability to be holy. St. Charbel would be the first to say he didn't make himself holy. He would say, the Lord is at work here. Focus on Him. Let His power be what makes your life fruitful. So that's what we do. We ask His intercession, St. Charbel's intercession, and we ask that the Lord will continue to transform us into rich soil so that we can bear for the Lord much good fruit.